I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, famous quotes, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous hosts, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Raven Puff Common Room.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering the final chapter of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, chapter 17, The Man with Two Faces. In this chapter, Snape isn't the bad guy.
A miracle. A miracle.
What a concept.
Right.
It's actually Voldemort using someone else like a parasite.
I mean, what an entrance for him. Like, we kind of got a little hint in the last chapter, but it's just the weirdest thing that could happen. What an intro.
Yeah. And then, so we'll go over this final chapter, and then we'll combine it with a wrap-up of the chapter where I have a variety of questions that Jess and I will both answer about the Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, man. This is the quiz I didn't study.
This isn't a trivia quiz. Okay. Calm down. Okay. These are like just general your impressions and reflections, so don't worry about it.
Okay. I was going to say, because like, this is definitely like a Hermione, like you would totally nail it, and I'm like losing my frog constantly.
So. There are no yes or no answers on this.
Okay.
These questions, perfect. I assure you. But first, chapter 17, The Man with Two Faces. So what did you think of when it said it was Quirrell?
So I probably approached some of this, but I think this is the whole point of these discussions, as just like base it in reality and just events going on in the world. And it's called The Man with Two Faces, and it's Quirrell. And, you know, he basically tells the kids like that he acted like this kind of like nervous mess so he could be deceptive. And I was surprised it was Quirrell given his skittishness, but I was more surprised that he is like housing Voldemort. That was crazy.
Okay, kind of surprised if he was acting on his own as a sort of mini villain, but the fact that he was in cahoots with Voldemort was more surprising.
I guess like it was, I didn't really, you know, it was kind of like, how do I feel about this? I was a little surprised that it was Quirrell. Just because he almost seemed like he was around, but I didn't really understand his importance too in depth. And then to kind of know how deep in it he was did surprise me. Like, I didn't realize that he was that involved with...
embroiled.
Yes. Like, he was literally... Voldemort was part of his body. So that was crazy. I didn't expect that.
So what I got out of this reread was, I think I appreciate Quirrell more as a villain because the books are so long and so vast, and because Quirrell dies at the end, mm-hmm. you know, he's so often kind of forgotten about. But when I return to this book and I think about, oh, he was a pretty shady villain in the sense of, again, just using the power of underestimation.
There we go. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure we both understand as women the power of
It's a hard word. Being underestimated.
Yeah, the power of being underestimated. And I have to admit that I am guilty of that, especially in my younger years and still to this day.
Of letting people underestimate you?
Yeah, of letting people underestimate me. And I tend to think of it as, I don't perceive myself as acting stupid or anything like that. I think just because I'm friendly and bubbly and I'm a very feminine person, I think it's indirectly people attach certain feminine interest and demeanor that I have with automatically being stupid.
Yeah.
If they underestimate me and they get screwed over because of it, too darn bad. That's your own sexist fault.
Preach. I agree with that 100%. I have talked to several people just about, like, you know, career and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know, I called, you know, an example of a problem. I said, I called this out, you know, years ago. Why didn't people listen to me? And I just kind of finally am like, it's because of being female. It's because of the way I talk. It's because of all these factors that, like, I can't really control. So, you know, how do you combat that? And I think that your way and Coral's way, and I think another character that Mate's way is kind of going like, okay, yeah, you can think that about me, but in reality, I really, you know, have more up my sleeve. I know I've been told at my current job that I'm pretty quiet, even though I talk on this podcast. I'm a pretty quiet person and things. And I had a coworker say, oh yeah, you're quiet, but we know, like, something, you're thinking about something. I'm like, oh, you're not wrong. So that is a kind of a powerful position. You're just smart to use it. I just kind of sit there and I'm like, but anyway.
Yeah. So it was Quirrell, and Harry is shocked because, again, he cannot compute. And I think it's, again, it's really kind of creepy the way that Quirrell calls him out on it and is just like, next to him, who would have suspected poor, just a stuttering Professor Quirrell?
Yeah, this whole chapter, again, this is why I'm enjoying this, because it gets really dark, and I've heard that from people, but poor stuttering Quirrell, and then it just gets kind of, he like binds him, right, with like tree roots?
Or with ropes, yeah.
With ropes, yeah.
And he's just so blasé about, no, you idiot, I tried to kill you.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I didn't. And you made me think of, we talked about this, and I'm like, I know it's not Snape. I know it's somebody else. So, and it was Quirrell, and Snape was saving his ass. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, Severus does seem the type, doesn't he? So useful to have him swooping around like an overgrown bat.
Sorry.
Exactly. Snape will be referred to as a bat multiple times throughout this series by multiple people on both sides of the spectrum of good and evil. Yeah, so what did you think of, you know, you were so confused by the Quidditch match, and you're like, I know it's not safe because that's too obvious, but still, what is he doing? So how is it finally getting the sense that, oh, he was doing the counter curse, and that's why he had his eyes on Harry?
Well, I like that the, like, level of complexity in the relationship with Snape, that, again, we're viewing these as Harry's retelling of his life. I like that it's kind of like, no, you know, Quirrell says to him, like, no, he still hates you. He just didn't want, like, you to die. And I think that's really interesting and nuanced way to approach people. Like, here we have who the kids perceive as a bad guy, who in actuality, like, sure, like, why do you hate a 10-year-old? Like, that's kind of sad. But also, it's a little more nuanced than that. Like, you can dislike somebody but still kind of do the right thing in a way, from my assessment of this.
Yeah, and I like, you know, again, everyone talks about how, you know, complicated and multidimensional Snape is, and that only gets more so in later books as more and more of his history and past gets revealed. But even just here, like, you know, telling, again, Harry's writing this for, you know, a younger audience, and so trying to explain to kids that, yeah, people like Snape exist where they may hate your guts, but they don't want you dead.
Right. Yeah, it's a hard thing to, I think even for some people, some adults I know, myself, sometimes to wrap my head around some of those things. So it's good. It's a good lesson to learn early.
So Quirrell is the one who let the troll in.
Yeah. He, again, a lot more diabolical than we thought he was. I mean, he was trying to get a child, so that's pretty awful. But all in servitude of Voldemort. But then, you know, because of this allegiance to Voldemort, to get the philosopher.
Yep. So what did you think about the reemergence of the Mirror of Erised at the end?
I thought about you saying, like, here, it's going to come back. And I was like, oh, here it is. Which was a very interesting way, and also very keen on Harry's part. I don't know if in that moment of panic I would have been that level.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, he tries to keep Quirrell talking. And again, it's the classic bad guy info dump, which, mm-hmm. you know, people criticize, like, how realistic these sort of things is. But honestly, given to how I know how narcissistic some bad people can be, I totally buy it.
I totally buy it, too. I mean, I know just, like, people that think they're great. I mean, they might not have ill intentions, but, you know. Well, no, you know, some people just reveal themselves to you if you just let them talk. And that's, you know, that I don't think that's too far-fetched. Like, if anything, a lot of the nuances in Quirrell, it seemed pulled from real life. I mean, not the head, not the second face or whatever, but.
Yeah. And so in this way, you know, all the things that they misconstrued of Snape bullying Quirrell, Snape was actually being bad cop.
Yeah. Yeah, very. So trying to really kind of save Harry, even though it looked different. And it kind of makes you think about when you're a kid. So I have I had a teacher. I'll just relate it to this. He was a hard ass. He was a dick. I don't think he liked anybody. But I learned so much from his class, to the point, like, to things that I used in graduate school, as far as how to write a good research paper, how to cite sources correctly, you know, things like that. So I'm not justifying being a dick. I'm just saying that you never truly know somebody.
True. And then so it comes out that Quirrell is acting at the behest of Lord Voldemort. And Quirrell is like, "He's with me wherever I go," said Quirrell quietly. "I met him when I traveled around the world, a foolish young man. I was then full of ridiculous ideas about good and evil. Lord Voldemort showed me how wrong I was. There is no good and evil. There is only power and those too weak to seek it." So that's one of my favorite quotes of the whole book.
Yeah.
Like, there's no good and evil, only power and those too weak to seek it. Because not that I agree with that, but it does just showcase how a lot of people operate in this world.
Agreed. This is in line with a lot of conversations and things I've been thinking about, and just being raised in the Catholic Church. No offense to anybody, but it does kind of alter your thinking a little bit. And when you kind of realize that, I like that quote too. I you know, like, highlighted it or whatever. And because it is, it's kind of like, well, that's kind of an intense way to look at it, but it's not true. You know, there, depending on what you're looking at. I don't know if lust for power is, like, something that I'm gonna promote by any means, but it's very interesting.
And again, to go back to Game of Thrones, because again, I'm reading Game of Thrones. So basically, it reminds me of, you know, Littlefinger's "Chaos is a Ladder" speech.
Oh, that's an excellent.
An illusion, like love, religion, like the country or patriotism or nationalism. It's all an illusion. Only the ladder to power is real. The climb is all there is.
Yeah, that's a great. That can be your next podcast, Amy, like Game of Thrones and Harry Potter, and like where you compare the two. It would be really.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll devote several of the scholarly Slytherclaw episodes to those comparisons. Oh,
sweet. Awesome.
Yep. And so, yeah, Quirrell is just walking around the mirror trying to figure out, like, how it is. And one thing I will say about, you know, as we talked last week with Morgan, you know, the challenges kind of represented the four elements, because the teachers who contributed those challenges are the head of houses, and each house represents an element.
Right, right.
So we have the four elements of water, fire, and earth, and air, which happened last chapter. But Dumbledore's contribution represents a fifth element in pagan witchcrafty belief systems, which is spirit.
Oh, okay.
So that's the idea that, you know, the pentagram, you know, the five-pointed star, and each point is water, fire, earth, air, and then at the top is spirit.
Okay. That what a big, like, omission, thinking about the things that I learned. I can't believe that I forgot spirit. Like, what in the world? What is wrong?
Yeah, so it's just the idea that Dumbledore is the headmaster and the final challenge is the ultimate element, spirit.
That is an intense challenge, but it makes.
So finally it gets to the point where Quirrell is trying to figure out how to get the stone out of the mirror, and Quirrell's like, "Help me, master." And there's this voice. And so Harry gets put in front of the mirror. And what happens?
he's just, he's smart. He is, what am I saying to say? He outsmarts Quirrell. He lies to him, basically. But also, somehow the stone is in his pocket, too.
Yeah, so somehow, some way, the mirror recognized him or his intent or whatever and just gave him the stone.
I stumbled with that a little bit because I didn't understand that. But we kind of learned how that all came about. So at this point, Harry doesn't know that there is a Voldemort on the back of his head, right?
No, not yet. He just hears this bodiless voice giving commands. Ugh.
That's so creepy. Yeah, I bet. I mean, I would think it was like a voice in head. What is going on tonight? That's okay. That's pretty creepy. But Harry is still smart. This is not to not give in.
Yeah. And then the voice is like, let me speak to him face to face. Master, you are not strong enough. I have strength enough for this. So again, give me a play-by-play of your reaction.
So first of all, I was like, okay, Harry felt as if the devil's snare was rooted him to the spot. And then he screams, which I thought that for some reason that kind of stood out to me because I don't think he's been very jarred through this whole thing. He's kind of been this whole book very, you know, getting knocked off brooms, crazy things have happened. But I thought it was very interesting that it says Harry would have screamed could he have sound. So that stood out to me. It also made me as I have. Just let me.
Oh, when you scream and you can't, or yes. If you scream, you finally wake up.
I hate those nightmares.
I hate those, and I've been having a lot of them lately.
Oh, I don't know. I think some of my friends would say like it's a choked throat. Anyway, like that. So that makes me think of that dream. And then it whispers to him. Oh, it said it was chalk white with glaring red eyes, which was creepy, and slits for nostrils like a snake. But I'm also trying to envision in my mind a person with like this little Snape face, or not Snape, sorry, Voldemort face on the back of his head. Like I said, what a weird intro for him. And I know that this is not like he defeats the bad guy, because, you know, I think at this point, I know that that's not going to happen, but it was a very interesting way to introduce the villain and have him speak.
Mm-hmm. See what I have become, the face said. I have form only when I can share another's body, but there have always been those willing to let me into their hearts and minds. Unicorn blood has strengthened me these past weeks. You saw faithful Quirrell drinking it for me in the forest, and once I have the elixir of life, I will be able to create a body of my own.
Ugh. Well, the unicorn blood thing, again, we talked a lot about the unicorns last week, made me sad for the poor unicorns. But also the fact that what does he say? He says, but there have always been those willing to let me into their hearts and minds. You know, I think when reading the story, everybody's so excited because they think Voldemort has been defeated that I think it's easy to forget that he does have people out there that do give him allegiance. And so being reminded of that and then, you know, shown that with Quirrell was kind of.
Yeah. And I think it shows like the fact that he was clearly a very charismatic person. And I think it goes to show that, you know, even in the spectral form, his face is like, we're assumed to believe that he's delved in so much evil and whatever that has transfigured his face to the point where he doesn't have a real human faces anymore. His face is so snake-like. But he did, as we'll learn in the next book, he was a quote-unquote normal person who was very charming and could get people to do what he wanted.
Sounds familiar. I guess. And if I forgot, I'm sorry. We don't know anything about like his lineage or anything yet.
Not yet.
Okay. Okay, good. Because I was like, oh, shoot, what did I forget? But
and again, just the creepiness of Quirrell was walking backwards at him so that Voldemort could still see him closer.
That was a weird image to kind of think about as well. It took me a second to be like, oh, this face is on this back of this guy's head. So,
and there are very few things I can remember from my very first like reading of Harry Potter, because again, it was just so long ago when I was like 11 or 12. I remember this shit.
It's a pretty intense, scary scene for a young audience. This is all very dark, and especially when you're again telling a 10-year-old that, like, you want to kill this person. Somebody's going to do it, like, you're bidding for you, like, killing a child. What is going on here? It's pretty intense.
Yeah, so Voldemort orders Quirrell to seize Harry, but Quirrell can't. It's like, to touch Harry is painful. He gets blisters. He's burning. And Harry catches on to this and just latches onto Quirrell to cause him as much pain as possible.
Diabolical, Harry, but good for you.
I'm a little disappointed that we don't see, like, the culmination of, like, Quirrell's death or Voldemort's escape or whatever, because Harry passes out.
And you know what? That I'm glad you mentioned that, because for a second when I was reading this, I thought I my brain turned off and I just read past something, but I realized I didn't. And he just kind of disappears, and then he sees something gold was glinting just above.
Yep, and he thinks it's a snitch, but no, he's safe now in the hospital wing, and Professor Dumbledore is there.
Better than a snitch, if you ask. Always love window.
And the foot of his bed is bursting with candy and flowers and well wishes.
That, you know, that is kind of one of my, I love Dumbledore and I love this. What happens down in the dungeons between you and Professor Quirrell is a complete secret. So naturally, the whole school knows.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the little throwback. I believe Mr. Fred and George were responsible for trying to send you a toilet seat, but Madame Pomfrey confiscated it. She felt it might not be very hygienic.
Yeah. Those. I really like their relation. Need a Dumbledore in my.
Yeah. Yeah, so Harry's been out for 3 days solid.
I guess we know the power that Voldemort has. I mean, even as a face on the back of somebody's head, it's pretty.
Yeah, so ultimately, Harry just passed out when Dumbledore came and, like, pushed Quirrell off of him.
And then Dumbledore just let Quirrell die.
Yeah, and so clearly Voldemort can exist without a body, but if he does exist without a host, he's basically this sort of very weak, spectral, ghosty thing.
Weird.
So it's not like by Quirrell dying, Voldemort died. Like, he can exist without a host, but just not in a corporeal fashion.
Okay. Well, that's creepy, because that means he can kind of, like, does he have to, like, lure somebody in, or can he, like, possess somebody? Seems like they have to be willing participants.
Yeah, I think so. And then, you know, Harry's so insistent, like, where's the stone? Where's the stone? And Dumbledore tells him, Nicholas and I decided that to destroy the stone.
Again, these are some big life lessons for, like, kids and for 37-year-old women, that he talks about, like, okay, well, if you destroy the stone, then these two people are going to die. And Dumbledore's response, and I've seen this quote before too. After all, to the well-organized mind, death is but the next. That's some heavy stuff to drop on a somebody.
Well, it just makes me think of, if they were so flippant about death, then why create a philosopher's stone?
Yeah, you know, I thought about that as well. Is it just because these people have lived for, like, 600 and some years and they're just like, you know what, we've seen enough? Or...
Yeah, I think that might be a part of it. And I think it also goes into, again, you know, it's explained to Harry how he got the stone, that Dumbledore basically charmed the mirror so that only someone without malicious intent could acquire the stone, not use it for its own purpose.
Right. And he knew Harry wouldn't be like Gollum with the ring. You know, he wouldn't be like,
My precious.
Yeah. Keep it forever. He would, that's one of the first things he does when he, like, comes to. He's like, what about the Philosopher's Stone? Not like, oh, maybe Dumbledore just won't think about it, you know? So.
And I think that by extension, we can apply that theory to what, to, in this world, only Nicholas Flamel could create the stone because he has this attitude about death. So someone who is really obsessed, like Voldemort, wanting to live forever, are not going to be able to create it. But someone who has a more impartial view was able to do it and use it.
Yeah, that's a great point. So he's kind of like, if I don't have it, like, he's free from its chains, because otherwise you have a Voldemort.
Yeah, and I think it's a very good lesson to teach kids, of the idea that the more you want something, the less likely it is to happen.
Yeah, a lesson in disappointment or something. I think it's also kind of interesting, like, just that's not really going to create happiness when you get the thing too, you know? I don't know.
Going into the lesson of if you finally get the thing that you want, when you're chasing a thing you so desperately want, you put that thing on a pedestal and you think all my life's problems will be solved and, you know, I'll be so, so happy. And then you get it. And then it's like, wow, shit's still the same. Have you seen the movie Soul yet?
No, I haven't seen it yet, but I really need to watch it.
There, it delves into these issues about like expectation and then again, really deep things like the meaning of life. But there's one like little story within that movie that basically says, I know a story of a fish who went up to this older fish and he's like, I'm looking for the ocean. And the older fish is like, the ocean, you're swimming in it. And the younger fish is like, this thing, this is water. What I want is the ocean.
I'm just grateful that those things are being talked about. I think like when we're recording, this is during the pandemic. And I think it has made a lot of people kind of step back and think like, what's important? And do I wait for that, you know, thing, like that thing that I'm going to get? It's just like a shopping addiction, you know, like you think that like you buy this thing and it'll make you happy. And I might have a lot of books to prove that sometimes before I figured that out. But then you kind of realize like, no, that little serotonin hit is, that's all it is. And then it just goes away. And then, you know, and consumer culture thrives on that.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I'm at a point where I've kind of cut myself off where I only very specific like books or circumstances, but I'm not allowed to buy any more books anymore for the rest of the year.
I admire your strength. That's what I'll say. I need to do the same thing. I'm pretty much only sticking to book of the month. Please sponsor us. But that's kind of my only book purchase right now, especially with our, you know, I have all the Harry Potter books. So
yeah, for me, it's less a financial thing, but more like my Goodwill has yielded so many good books. I don't have space on the brand new bookshelves I installed.
Yeah, that's always a good. I like to stack them like too deep, and then I'm like, oh, maybe I need to just read the books I have right now. Yeah. What a novel concept.
Yeah, and then I think this whole like the universe only gives you something when you're like not obsessing over it anymore. I feel like this is very true of me in my dating life, because when I met my husband, like, or started dating my husband, like a few months. Like prior to that, I just sort of kind of accepted, okay, clearly I'm not attracting the kind of guy I would want to be with, you know, long term. I just have to accept that I'm probably going to be by myself for the next 10 years traveling the Middle East and just be okay with that. And so once I got into that mindset, poof, my husband appeared.
A similar thing happened to me with my husband, and I had dated for a long time, and I was just like, you know what, it's fine. We'll just kind of be together. And then that like night he proposed, I was like, oh, okay. So I guess the message here is just like, stop, you know, just let life play out the way a little bit. I think that's hard to learn. I think that's something I'm learning with, especially career and wanting to figure some things out. It's really hard to, when you keep trying to change something and you're just like, okay, at some point you go, okay, just, I don't know what to do with it.
Yep. And then so Harry asked Dumbledore, so, you know, this whole deal with Voldemort, why was he trying to kill me as a baby in the first place? And Dumbledore won't tell him.
Right. Well, and then and Dumbledore won't tell me either, which is bothersome. I'm like, dude, just like have a little thought, or so I know. But then he tells him like, but you know, just like put it off your mind. I'm like, what? Come on. That had to be frustrating for Harry too. I know I was frustrated, obviously.
Yeah. And then Dumbledore goes on to explain, you know, your mother died to save you. This imparted a very powerful magic so that Voldemort at this point is unable to like do any harm to Harry. And by that extension, possessing Quirrell, Quirrell could not do any harm to him because his mother's sacrifice, you know, leaves its own protection.
Yeah, I really liked that, like, because that she loved him so much, and I thought that was a very nice sentence.
You know, I think it's very sweet and moving, and not bashing it for anything, but just the whole, again, this way we idealize motherhood, and in this way, it's showing in a magical, tangible form, and just kind of making me think about, you know, how much we attach importance on motherhood to women. And again, that should be women's only role and things like that. Which, not that this is implying that that is women's only role, but just the implication of it. If you put, if you make something like that tangible in a magical way, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. I guess when I was thinking about it, I didn't think of it from that perspective, which is horrible because that's like my background is in women and gender studies. But I also thought about it, I guess, too, as just the whole love, as far as not necessarily romantic love, or just kind of like the kind of good over evil and love, just something caring and compassion for your fellow wizard rather than being power hungry and the chaos is a ladder speech. You know, it's almost kind of.
Yep. And we don't get answers to the big questions, but Dumbledore did give him the invisibility cloak.
Thank goodness. At least he gave us something. So that was from his dad, which he gave to Dumbledore.
Yep. And so what did you think of, you know, why Snape is the way he is, like in regards to disliking Harry so much?
So sometimes I read these things and I know there's more to it. And especially like I think on this podcast so far, I've said the biggest mystery to me is that, you know, people love Snape or like romanticize him. And I haven't figured out why yet. So I almost felt like that was kind of Dumbledore's, he wasn't giving full story right there. He said he didn't want to be in your father's debt and he worked so hard to protect you this year because he felt he would make him in your father. And then he could go back to hating your father's peace. So I was kind of like, is that all? I mean, there's obviously then why does he hate his father?
But I'm and also sure. Again, the moral complexities around Snape and again, showing to children that there are people who are genuinely like this, who will do the good thing for very, very selfish reasons.
Right. That's a great point. Yeah.
This, like, it's not so much about, I want this kid to stay alive so he can thrive and succeed and all those things. I want him to survive so I personally don't have to feel guilt.
I mean, I guess if you need somebody to help you stay alive, then I would be okay with that. Like, oh, that's fine. You can think I suck, but just make sure I stay alive. That's okay. A very complicated relationship there.
Yep. And then I love the way it ends with Dumbledore. Like, he's like, okay, I'm not that partial to Bertie Bott's every flavor beans, but I think I'll be safe with a nice toffee. And then he spits it out and he's like, alas, earwax.
Yeah, that was I like, again, has some bit of wisdom, gives you a warm fuzzy for now.
Yeah, Dumbledore is awesome. And in fact, I remember there was one BookTube tag that I wanted to do but didn't end up doing it, but one of the questions was like, which fictional character has the most style? And you know, people were mentioning, you know, very, again, quote unquote cool fictional characters, but I'm just like, best style, like Dumbledore for sure. Jewel encrusted robe and the long beard.
Yeah, he's like, he's
like,
I agree with that.
Runway.
Yeah, he is ahead of his time in so many ways.
Then Ron and Hermione come to visit and he tells them what happens. And Hagrid also comes in as well.
Poor Hagrid.
He's like, I'll never drink again. And I'm like, oh yeah, let's see how long that lasts.
That's what we all say, Hagrid. After a long... Yeah, I felt so bad for him. But because he also thought he was responsible for putting Harry in danger. He really kind of felt really bad about that.
Yeah, but again, I agree with Harry that it doesn't matter if it was Hagrid or not. They would have figured it out one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Voldemort's kind of been coming for Harry. That's kind of the whole of, why he's telling his story.
So, and then the final, like, big feast comes. And how do you feel about Dumbledore just dumping all the points on Gryffindor?
Well, I thought at first I was like, okay, come on. But then I was like, well, I thought back to that line about it being an open secret of what actually happened in the dungeons. So I kind of couldn't blame Dumbledore for doing it. At first I was a little bit like, I mean, nobody really loves that Slytherin had it, but then we can kind of swallow it and move on. But I don't know. Harry and Ron and Hermione and then Neville too, they all did the right thing. And I think that's what he was in rewarding. Or they all did the right thing or the best thing, even though they might have broken some rules to get there. they did.
Yeah.
So but I was kind of okay.
Yeah. My favorite part of it was, like, it takes a great deal of courage to stand up to your enemies, but even more so to your friends.
That is an excellent point. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, because definitely, again, teaching about the notions of peer pressure, that it's harder to, well, you know, to voice your objections to people you respect and admire and just be like, I think this is a terrible idea.
Yeah, that is really hard. I know that that's been hard for me in my life. You know, when you like somebody and you disagree with them, I think I was raised to be very amenable. And sometimes when I've kind of challenged myself to, like, just do it, disagree with this person, see what happens. And at work, not if I genuinely agree with them, but just kind of to challenge myself career-wise. And it's hard, especially when you like them. Don't do it just to be a dick. That's not, like, what I'm saying, everybody. I'm just saying, you know, if somebody does have a point not necessarily in agreement with, there's no problem with standing up for. Good on Neville.
Yep. And so Gryffindor wins the House Cup. And the school year ends happily. And they go back to King Cross Station. And the Dursleys are there to pick him up. And yes, I will, said Harry. And they were surprised at the grin that was spreading over his face. They don't know we're not allowed to use magic at home. I'm going to have a lot of fun with Dudley this summer.
Oh, Harry.
And sassy Harry. Didn't come through right in the movies.
Yeah, I need to go rewatch that now that I've read the book completely. So.
And that is The Philosopher's Stone.
Wow. I am just so surprised how much happens in a couple of chapters. That's what I think the thing that has got me through this. But I think it also stems a little bit from all the Gothic literature that we've read and how long it takes to, like, describe a tree sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So yeah. So because there was only one chapter, you know, left, and of course it's, like, the first book shorter. So I'm attaching our, like, wrap up session to this episode. In the future, when we finish, like, the other books, like, either they end on an even number, so the wrap up session will be separate, or there'll be so much involved that we'll have to do them separately anyway. But so here is my first question for you. What was your favorite chapter and why?
What was my favorite chapter? Why? Oh, man. Flipping through them really fast. Okay, so I think I'm about to be maybe a cliche or something, but I liked the chapter where Christmas happened. I thought that was nice reprieve and kind of
the Mirror Erised chapter.
Yes. Okay. So that was all, that had all kinds of things that I liked. A little bit of gothicness with the mirror. And just some, like, kinship and with the Golden Trio and a great quote. I think that's where my little star is. It does not do to dwell on dreams. That just was kind of a standout chapter for me. Was there one that resonated with you after you reread it?
Yes. Upon this rereading, I found my favorite chapter was chapter 15, The Forbidden Forest. And not purely because of its gothicness was what we're kind of honing in on, but also just the level of foreshadowing and symbolism that's involved, both for the specific story of Harry Potter and just wider literature.
Oh, that's a good chapter as well. I really like talking to Morgan too about the pictures and things like that.
Yeah, because we've got the symbolism of the unicorn, we've got the centaurs, which got me thinking about how we screw over Native Americans and all sorts of crap.
A lot of things pulled from that chapter.
Okay. Question number two. What was your least favorite chapter and why?
The Quidditch chapter.
The Quidditch chapter?
Just so easy to just gloss over stuff like that, like just more of the sportsy action stuff. But that's the only one that came to mind right away. I know important things happened in there, but there was a lot of Quidditch happening and I was kind of, it wasn't very long. So how about, did you have one?
Yes, I had one. Was not Quidditch because, again, I appreciate the fact that, again, what happens in that chapter is pivotal to the plot, and it's pivotal to the subtle clues that Harry, the writer, gives in showing that Quirrell was right there. Hermione knocked him over before setting Snape on fire.
True.
So, my least favorite chapter was chapter 3, The Letters from No One. Because, again, the level of cartoonish craziness of Harry cannot even get one freaking letter.
Yes, I remember that really bothered me. Yeah.
Yeah, and it bothered Lisa too when she was on the show.
Yeah. It's so easy. Now that you say that, I kind of always forget that like Privet Drive even happened, you know, because it's like the rest of it is so fun that you forget kind of the misery of the Dursleys. And then at the end of the book, they remind you like, oh, Harry's just about to go have like, he had like an awesome year, school year, and now he's just going to go have like just absolute trash summer. Kind of feel bad for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. Question number 3. What was your favorite character outside of the Golden Trio?
I think this is a fairly obvious one. It's Dumbledore. Love him. I love his wisdom. I love his care. I love his kind of, relaxed demeanor. Yes, he's kind of like the creme de la creme of wizards. And he definitely seems very level-headed about it. So he's just like, to me, like just like an older person that I would just want to spend, you know, like just go visit. I read a book called The Courage to be Disliked earlier in later in the year. And it was just like a young boy going and talking to a philosopher. And, you know, a couple times a month or once a month or whatever. Anyway, I would like to have that same situation, but it'd be dumb. Just absorb his will.
My favorite character outside the Golden Trio was Professor McGonagall.
Oh, really? Oh, I like
that. Yeah, because I feel like I appreciate her more as an adult. I feel like she wasn't really a favorite of mine in my childhood, but looking on her now, like, again, she's quiet, rigid, working behind the scenes, but you know she's working behind the scenes a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that's poor McGonagall. I went for flashy Dumbledore. I like the humble cat McGonagall.
Yeah. Question number 4. What was your favorite magical item that appeared in this book?
Well, we all know how everyone felt about the Remember-All, right? Amanda and Kevin. What was my favorite? You know, I think this is going to be really trivial, so everybody's probably going to laugh at me. But I really thought the little playing cards were kind of a cute thing. It reminded me of baseball cards, and you would get kind of like,
oh, the chocolate frog cards.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, the chocolate frog cards that had like important people on it. I just think that was kind of cute. I know that is really kind of frivolous. But as an artist, I think I kind of like frivolity sometimes. So especially in my paint. But so I think that was fun. I mean, there's no really no point to it, but it's just kind of a fun thing. So what is your favorite magic?
Mine is the titular item, the Philosopher's Stone.
Well, that is a great one to pick.
We went on opposite sides of the spectrum. Yes. The most trivial. And like, there's a lot in between. There are wands. Yeah. There's the Mirror of Erised. There are a lot of things to choose from. Like the magic chess set or something. But we go completely the one extreme or the other.
I love it. I think that's good. I think that shows that we've created some like beginning and end points. And then everybody can fill in the in between.
Yeah. So I like the Philosopher's Stone. Again, just because I am genuinely interested in the notion of alchemy and the sort of symbolism of the transformative aspect that the Philosopher's Stone is supposed to represent, and the fact, and again, the lesson in that this was the MacGuffin of the story that everyone was after, but at the end it gets destroyed.
It does have a very cool story itself. Its trajectory path of the story is very good pick. I like baseball cards, I guess. I don't. I just thought it was cute.
Question number 5. What was your favorite magical creature to appear in the book?
Oh, gosh. I think we're going to agree on this one. I liked the dragon.
Of course, the dragon. How can you not give it to baby Norbert?
No, what a cool thing. And I like the discussion about the dragon and just it within the story. And yeah, was yours different?
No, it was also the dragon.
Okay, I didn't think so. Okay.
Even though I am slightly disappointed in this series that dragons don't play a larger role, or even if they didn't play a huge role, the fact that they're not like wiser and more sentient, they're just purely like treated like an endangered species. But I'll take anything over nothing.
Yeah, I think that had like the perfect in this book. I'm disappointed to know that they're not throughout the series, but I did like how that made an appearance.
Mm-hmm. All right, question number 6. In your opinion, what was the most gothic element in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone?
Oh, God. Sorry, I'm laughing because I'm like, I wish I would think about these things off the top of my head. So I'm just going to go with what comes off the top of my head. I feel like that's the most authentic. I think the Mirror of Erised was kind of a cool gothic thing, like just in so many facets. Not only is it showing you like what you truly want, and then there's this element of people getting so enamored with it that they like would die in front of it, but just like as a black mirror somewhere, it just has a kind of a cool, scary history. Like imagine that being part of a gothic novel in itself, in being a found item. And I feel like you could build an entire story around that object, much like the library that you told me about, the author that built a story around that. So that's what I'm going to go with, gothic-y.
So the most gothic element, in my opinion, is Snape.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of your post that you had on Instagram. Yeah, he's pretty gothic.
Again, both in superficial ambience and appearance, but also we're exploring the notion of the complex. I don't know if anti-hero is the right word, but certainly not a villain or directly like an antagonist, like showing someone who is, you know, miserable, a pain in the butt to deal with, that is gothic in a lot of ways, because, you know, so much there's the gamekeeper or whoever who is a pain in the butt to the person going into the manor house, and they don't know why they're so bitchy, but they're never really the bigger problem that the protagonist has to face.
Wouldn't you love like if the Snape's whole like demeanor, you know, that he was just like, I've read Wuthering Heights and I was just like, Heathcliff is my boy, and I'm going to develop a whole personality around him. Like, I don't know.
Well, again, Snape is a half-blood. Maybe he's read Wuthering Heights and decided, yep, I'm going to be Heathcliff and terrorize the kids.
Maybe. I don't know. It's funny.
I think you may have answered this, but question 7, what was your absolute favorite quote from the entire book?
It is the one that I read. Yeah. The one Dumbledore that I almost had memorized, but it does not do well to dwell on dreams and mm-hmm. like that.
Yes. You are very attached to the Mirror of Erised.
I guess I am. I didn't even realize that.
Like, just answering these questions, like 3 of the questions have been affiliated with Mirror of Erised in some capacity.
That must have really rocked my world. I don't know why, but, you know, maybe years later, revisit the series. Oh, maybe it'll be different. I don't know. But how about you? Did you have a favorite quote?
My favorite quote is, as much as I like There's Only Power, my favorite is Dumbledore's quote at the end, which is, to the well-organized mind, death is the next great adventure.
That's a great, I feel like I could just like think about that for
like
for
literally hours. I don't know, when I die, I don't know if I want to be cremated or put in one of those like pods to plant a tree, but if I do have a traditional tombstone, that's going on my tombstone.
I love it. It's perfect. It's it definitely reveals a philosophy on life that so I think that's great.
Alrighty then. So those are all the question number 8. What was the biggest thing that you took away from reading Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone?
I really like how we have approached this podcast, because I think it is you can apply things, you can pull from it and look at life, apply it into real life, and you can see some of that reflected back. I also think that kind of book specific, what I liked is the gothic elements, of course, in kind of having the back enough background. If I read the book, which I have just seen the movie, I was not savvy enough to pull those gothic elements and understand, appreciate them. So I did like that. And I like that it's kind of giving some pretty heavy information to kids. I know that, you know, a lot of adults read this to their kids. And I don't know. I think that's it kind of like, you probably have a lot of adults reading this to their kid going like, it's pretty heavy, or never thought about it that way. So that's what I enjoyed.
Yeah. What did I take away from this book? I took away the complexity of it in the sense that people like to dismiss the first three books as being kind of trivial and just, oh, like wizards, magic and stuff. But when you really think about it, there's a lot, as you said, a lot going on with death and, you know, pathological longing and the Mirror of Erised and like all sorts of crazy stuff. And which is why it's a book that makes you think, which is why I think the book should have kept its original British title, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, and not think you're going to scare kids away. It's like, oh no, a book that makes you think, like, I'm not going to read this.
Yeah, I mean, God forbid somebody have a thought. I know there's been a lot of, you know, powers that be and things that really want that to not happen. I think it's good.
Oh, it makes me think of the Gaston song from Beauty and the Beast. Le fou, I've a prayed, I've been thinking. A dangerous pastime, I know.
That's the perfect song lyric for that. Now I need to rewatch that. So much movies and things.
Do you have Disney Plus?
I don't, but I need to get it because I want to watch Soul. So
yeah, no, my parents, they revamped their phone plan or whatever, and they had a few freebie. They had Disney Plus and could add a few freebie people. So my sister and I are now piggybacking on my parents' Disney Plus.
That's the best way to do stream episodes.
All righty then, and that concludes the final episode for Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Make sure to check out our Patreon page. We have 4 Patreon tiers: Gryffindor, Slytherclaw, Ravenclaw, and Gryffindor. And if you are a Slytherclaw patron, you will have access to bonus episodes where Jess and I take one element of the story and delve into it much more deeply. And those will be available only on Patreon, and they're called the Scholarly Slytherclaw Lecture Series.
It's a lot of S's, but yeah, if you really want to get into some of the elements more about here, an excellent choice. If you really want to geek out on some of the elements, and I think that will be a very good investment for you.
And then next week we will be starting Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. We will not be doing a sort of episode devoted to the movie. I know a lot of Harry Potter podcasts do that, but quite honestly, I don't really want to.
That's good, because I'm kind of really interested in kind of reading the books as without the taint of the movie.
I just feel like it's been done so much. I would rather just delve into more literary analysis of various angles of the text. I really don't want to bring the films into it unless patrons very specifically request it.
Yes, then that's fine. Then I will be happy to watch the movie if that's the case. I will say that, just like cover observation on the cover I have, there is a spider on the cover of this, and I'm not a big fan of spiders. And we're about to enter spider season, basically, beginning with the warmer weather. So
yeah,
I'm sure I'll get to meet some spiders.
Yeah, I'll be curious to hear your thoughts on Chamber of Secrets, because in a good sizable chunk of the fandom considers Chamber of Secrets to be the weakest book.
Interesting. I kind of had I don't think I knew that, but I did kind of assess that. This is the little bit of the sophomore slumping, but either way, I know it's probably essential to the rest of the stories. So
I personally, even in my childhood and currently as an adult, I like it more than Philosopher's Stone.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So I remember finishing Philosopher's Stone and being like, oh my God, this was amazing. And my sister's like, and then the second one is even better. And I'm like, no. And I read it and I'm like, yes, it's way better.
Well, I think we meet some characters in that. I know Moaning Myrtle. I'm just flipping through my edition.
You're dying to meet Moaning Myrtle. Like, Moaning Myrtle made a very strong impression on you. I don't know why, but...
I think it's her voice, or I just think she's, like, a weird... I don't know. I think that actress I've seen, too.
Yeah, but what does it say about you that's who you hone in on?
I just like to hang out in bathrooms, I guess. That's not it. No. I don't know. Well, I guess I'll find that out, probably.
Alrighty then. So, yes. So, next week, we will go over the first 2 chapters of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, which I believe they're, what are they called? Oh my God. The Worst Birthday and Dobby's Warning. And tune in by March 19th. Patrons will have access to the first Scholarly Slytherclaw episode, which is, the prompt is Harry Potter and the Gothic Orphan.
Exciting.
Yeah. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.